Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet. I'm Reuben Stern. As the nation continues its delicate path toward economic recovery, the future prosperity of those living in our smaller communities remains in question. In 2010, about 19% of rural residents in Missouri were living in poverty. That's about 5 percentage points higher than for people living in urban areas, according to data from the USDA. Contributing to the future uncertainty are trends that have been playing out for years. Migration to cities of younger people means outlying areas tend to have higher concentrations of elderly residents, and changes in technology have led to fewer jobs in traditional fields like agriculture. Over the past year, a group of journalists from KBIA and the Columbia Missourian have been working to document the stories of young people in the less populated parts of our state. They dubbed the project My Life, My Town, and this week a screening of the short documentaries is taking place at the Ragtag Cinema in Columbia. Coinciding with that, we decided on Intersection we'd take another look at the situation in smaller communities. What are the prospects for the youth of our small towns today and in the future? Will young people who do decide to stay put in the rural areas have what they need to keep those communities going? And if not, what ought to be done to help improve their chances? Joining me in the studio to talk about a few of these issues, first, Shirley LeBlanc is a young Harrisburg resident who's featured in the My Life, My Town project. Welcome to our studio, Shirley LeBlanc.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Glad to have you with us today and to hear from you. We also have with us Kathy Miller. She is the program director at the Rural Policy Research Institute, also known as RUPRI. Welcome to our program, Kathy
Miller. Thank you. Good to be here.
Glad to have you with us as well. We hope that you and our audience will participate, too. And if you live in one of the smaller towns in mid-Missouri, we especially would like to hear from you. How optimistic are you about the future of your town and the other small communities across Missouri? Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And Kathy, I want to start with you on this. How does the future look for a young person in a rural town today?
Well, I think it looks bright, and I think it can continue to look bright. It looks different, probably, than it looked several decades ago or even one decade ago. The economy is very different in America than it was several decades ago, and of course very different for rural America. The role of agriculture in terms of its employment is declining and has been for several decades. So the sources of jobs in rural areas will be quite different moving into the future than traditional rural industries.
Right. Shirley, how do you see it?
I think I would agree that it's bright. Personally, I with the employment, I haven't seen too many, opportunities available in the small town that I live in, but I actually do. I did find work at a church in a nearby small town in Fayette, Missouri. So, I think that the future is bright, for job opportunities, but as far as, employment in small towns, I think it is changing too.
Mm-hmm. And what's your situation? What's going on with you in your town?
Well, I actually lived with my parents after graduating from high school, and they just moved to Moberly, Missouri this August. So I have been living on my own with my son since August of this year. So I've been going through lots of changes and lots of new things and new opportunities, as this being one of them. It's very exciting. So in the rural area, I'm excited to be where I am because I'm comfortable there. I'm familiar with the town. So having a child is new enough. I'm glad that I didn't have to relocate, and have to learn a whole new town over again. And it's small enough that I have a lot of support from the community that I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had your son fairly young.
Yes. I found out I was pregnant when I was 17, and I had him when I was 18. Just last year in July is when he was born, and I'm 19 now. And so, starting my own little family, I was very young. But with as much support as I've had, it's gone okay.
And what kind of support are you getting in your community?
Well, my family has been my first and foremost support system. They've just carried me through it, you know, especially in the very beginning when, you know, I really couldn't support myself. Also, the small church that I have been a member of for about 10 years, they have really, you know, joined together and taken me and my son in to, you know, help us have what we need. They've given me so many donations just with diapers and baby clothes, and so it's been amazing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Kathy, how does Shirley's story fit in terms of the larger trends that we are seeing in small communities?
Yeah, we really enjoyed listening to Shirley tell her story because I think it's very typical of sort of the rural mindset. If you talk to people in rural communities across Missouri and across the country, what you'll find is such an incredibly strong sense of place and importance of place. And the people in those places are important. So Shirley, being in a small town, the town is always going to rally around its people. And so that strong sense of place really is one of the characteristics that it has always been very strong in rural communities and will continue to be.
It's interesting, though, because a lot of what we hear about rural communities is people leaving.
Right.
About that? I mean, how do those two things fit together?
Sure. Well, there is, you know, what's commonly called the brain drain, and that's where communities are losing their youth to seek opportunities elsewhere. There is some evidence, though, that when that occurs, so when communities lose their, you know, 18 to 25-year-olds, communities are also gaining 30 and 40-year-olds who do want to come back and raise a family in that rural community where they have some roots. We want our youth to be well-educated, and many times that requires leaving the community to seek economic opportunities. But what we do want to do is create economic opportunities in our small town so that those young people will want to return and have a good reason to return.
Right. We have a clip from another one of the My Life, My Town pieces, and I want to play that because it gets at something that we're talking about here. This is from a teenager named Madeline Brand, who lives in Glasgow, Missouri, and the profile is of her and her brother, and the whole piece sort of talks about their experience. But there's this one clip in there that she talks a little bit about what you just said in terms of the leaving and potentially coming back. And so I want to go ahead and play that again. This is Madeline Brand from a clip in the My Life, My Town series, talking about what she sees as her future. And so let's go ahead and play that clip.
I want to live in like Kansas City because I want to be a nurse. I thought about going to Springfield, but I was like, well, that's 3.5 hours away from here. And I don't like everybody knowing what you're doing and who did what. And everybody knows about everything. Everybody knows about everything because that's all like the old people do. They just sit and they gossip about who's doing what with who and who just had a baby and how much it weighed and what time. So, yeah. But I say that and I'll probably just end up back here.
Okay, again, that was a clip from the My Life, My Town series put together by KBIA and the Columbia Missourian. It's on the web at mylifemytown.org. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we are talking about the outlook for people growing up in rural communities and teenagers like the one you just heard from. Joining me in the studio, we just added to our table here, Roger Brailier is a technology integration specialist for the Hallsville School District. Welcome to our program,
yes, thank
Roger.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Glad to have you with us here. Also with us, who have been at the table for a while, Shirley LeBlanc, a young mother living in Harrisburg, and Kathy Miller, the program director at the Rural Policy Research Institute, also known as RUPRI. And I want to come back to that clip that we just played. You know, she ends it, she has these aspirations, and then she says, but in the end, I'll probably just wind up back here.
Yeah. So I think there's two ways to look at it. It's either I'll end up back here in a sort of negative sense, or I'll want to come back here and find it as a good place to raise my family. So what I heard when she was speaking was economic opportunity. So she's thinking about Kansas City or Springfield as being a place where she can find economic opportunities. So what we want for small communities is economic opportunities in those communities so that she'll want to continue with those roots in that small town and has an opportunity to do that right. And be successful.
Shirley, did you see yourself staying in Harrisburg?
Yeah. Well, actually, when I was at the beginning of my senior year, I didn't, you know. You say that you've seen evidence of the youth leaving and then coming back, 30s and 40s, and I think that's a lot of why smaller towns stay the size they are. I don't think for the most that they really start to dissipate or grow. When I started my senior year, I thought I would, you know, leave, you know, Harrisburg, maybe even Missouri. But after finding out that I was going to have a son and become a family, you know, just the two of us, I saw myself staying in Harrisburg because I knew it was a small community. I knew I'd be supported and that it would be safe for my son. So I think on a personal level, I've seen that, you know, where a lot of the people I graduated with, they went on to Columbia or Kansas City or wherever they found opportunities. But I think I've seen in Harrisburg a lot of those who graduate come back when they have a family.
Right. Roger Brailier, from your experience working with students at the high school level, you know, what have you seen in terms of their vision of what's possible in their towns versus having to go somewhere else?
You know, I think it varies depending on where the student came from originally. You know, in Hallsville, we are a kind of a closet community to the Columbia, Missouri area. We have a lot of students that will come in and be in our district for a year or two and then move on going along with their parents. The kids that have been there for quite some time like the area. The issue with Hallsville, there's not a lot of job opportunity. The good thing about that it is close enough to some of the larger areas that they can get jobs and still live within the Hallsville area, being close to family and friends in that area. So,
and do a lot of them, you know, in your mind, think that that's what they want to do from what you've seen in your experience?
What my experience has been, the ones that the families are from the small towns, they tend to stay there or would be the ones that come back in their 30s or 40s, more so than the people that have just been there for a little while that are following their parents, have, you know, come into the area for a job and then move within a few years. The ones with the roots tend to come back the most and stay in that area the most.
Mm-hmm. Okay, once more, I'd like to remind everyone that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the prospects for young people growing up in smaller communities, and we'd love for you to be part of that conversation. For those of you who live in a small town, what do you think are the most pressing needs in terms of keeping young people interested in those communities? We'd love to hear your observations, so give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And we'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can be part of our conversation at that time and watch our video stream by going to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. In terms of that idea that kids have to go off somewhere to have economic opportunities, you know, with the changing economics of the small towns, I mean, what is there to keep kids wanting to be in those communities? I mean, what's changing that might attract young people to want to stay? Or not. Maybe not. I mean, maybe it's not the case.
You know, I think our definition of community is starting to shift. Community used to be a geographic area. With the increase in availability of internet and the amount of cyber jobs, for lack of a better word, that are available to people, I think that's going to cause more people to choose to live where they want. You know, if you're a web designer or, gosh, an editor, there's so many things that you can do on the web and work from home. My job, for example, the main reason I go into school is I can get pictures and photographs, but a good part of my job is training with public relations, even as well in the district, can be done from home as long as I have a good enough computer and a fast enough internet connection. That has added a new element that I don't think was existent 20 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago.
Right. And are the young people coming out with skills to be able to do that sort of thing?
You'd be surprised. I was in a classroom the other day working on the new Photoshop, and a student came up to me and said, "Oh, hey, I'm the one that you know, you looked at my YouTube channel, and I asked you to subscribe to it. I watched his stuff. He did some fantastic stuff, you know." So there's a lot of new opportunities. You know, we're training kids for jobs that are not invented yet.
That's right. I think, you know, the economy is innovating very quickly. Mm-hmm. So the traditional sort of rural story of growing up in a rural community and then getting a job in the factory or the coal mine or working agriculturally just isn't the case any longer. But now the economy is filled with very innovative opportunities, things that aren't invented yet. And I think our rural youth are just as innovative as our urban youth, even more so. And I think instilling that strong sense of place in young people in middle school, high school, really goes a long way towards having those young people want to stay in that home.
And how does that connect in terms of the entrepreneurial skill of being able to spot opportunity? Like, how are young people being prepared for that in a smaller environment? If you grew up in New York City, it seems pretty obvious you'd be able to see where there's potential for business. But if you grew up in a town of, you know, 200, 300 people, where does that come from?
I think a lot of it comes from within. I think small communities tend to have challenges that require outside-the-box thinking. You know, in New York City, everything is sort of right there. In a rural community, there isn't much right there. So you need to really think outside the box in terms of everything from how am I going to go grocery shopping this week because it's an hour away to my child has a doctor's appointment and it's a half an hour away. And so everything is a different way of thinking. And so we can think about the gaps that exist in our community. We think about the technology and the way we can deliver goods and services to people absent a requirement of space. So I think it's just needing to innovate.
Right. Shirley, have you seen many of your peers adopt this kind of mindset?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think one of the things that really helps with being innovative with technology and stuff is growing up with it, because it's such a big part of life today that I think youth everywhere know exactly how to use it. You know, when they're a kid, they get to play with the iPhone and the laptops. They get introduced to those so young that they're so familiar with it. I think that helps a lot. And another thing that I think with job opportunities is that in a close-knit community, you know almost everyone that you're growing up with. So I think that that helps a lot with some of the social aspects. You know who in the town to talk to about getting a job if you want to mow lawns or something, or if you want to babysit. You know, I think you know who to look for and what to find and what to do in those situations. So I think that also helps, you know, with being innovative and helping with the business aspect of, you know, potential jobs and such. Mm-hmm.
And is the technology there? I mean, did most of your friends have access to smartphones or laptops or
things
like that?
When I was in junior high, I remember thinking, I'm the only one without a cell phone, you know? And then when I got a cell phone, I was the only one without texting. And then I got that. And so, you know, you still see it in a smaller school. It's there. You know, it might be a little bit slower internet connection because, you know, satellite doesn't reach as far or something like that. But for the most part, they have just as much access to the technology, I think.
I think there's been great strides in the last decade on sort of closing the digital divide between rural and urban places. I know in my small rural community where I live in Missouri, there's been huge, huge strides in our internet capability where we live, which is a pretty remote town. So I think there's a lot of work being done, making sure that rural individuals have the same technology access that urban people do.
You know, and a lot of times the technology that the students have in their pockets and their cell phones sometimes is much more effective and efficient than some of the school's computers in many cases. You know, depending upon the district, you have a laptop, or not even a laptop or a desktop computer that is 3 or 4 years old, and in their phone in the pocket is the latest iPhone or the Android phone that is faster, might have a better internet connection, you know, and so many times schools aren't letting them use that. So it's time for schools to start catching up to that. And there are schools that are doing that. Bring your own devices. You know, when I taught in middle school, my students used their cell phones, and it was long enough ago that I went to the superintendent and said, here's what I would like to do. I'd like them to be able to text some answers in. And we were able to get immediate results, and more teachers have adopted that. So, you know, it's a society where textbooks are going through a big paradigm shift also. You
know? And are the schools actually changing in their response to that? I mean, are things being taught differently?
Yes, they are. And it depends upon areas of the state. I just got back from the Mornet conference not too long ago, and there are schools that are literally getting rid of textbooks and going to iPods because they can get the textbooks on iPads, and have more up-to-date information. In addition to that, direct links to videos, interactive features that the students, like she mentioned, are used to using and engage them so quickly and so much better than a teacher can. And not downgrading the teachers, but when you've got 30 kids or 25 kids in a classroom, you can have 20 of them engaged one-to-one with a video or an interactive device, and then the teacher helping the other students that are needing help or have additional questions. So it's a new level of engagement that, again, hasn't existed.
And how far along is Hallsville with that?
You know, our technology is very good. I've just come up with a new quote: to stay ahead of the curve, you've got to keep moving. So there are things that we've got to do to stay ahead of the curve. We are very blessed that our teachers have always been embracing of technology. So that's always been a benefit to us.
Okay. Well, let me remind everyone once again, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the outlook for young people growing up in rural communities today. Joining me in the studio are Roger Brawlier, Technology Integration Specialist for the Hallsville School District, Shirley LeBlanc, a young mother who lives in Harrisburg, and Kathy Miller, a Program Director at the Rural Policy Research Institute, also known as RUPRI. For those of you in our audience, if you live in a rural area, how optimistic are you about what lies ahead for your community? We'd love to hear your thoughts. So give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. In terms of the future of small towns, and one of the, you know, the big things is jobs, jobs, jobs. We hear that a lot. And, you know, a lot of the things that we talk about in economic development, we've had several shows on that here. You know, it talks about getting businesses to locate in small towns. How viable is that as a strategy in terms of the future of young people and the small communities they live in?
Well, I think looking forward, you know, we've spent, Rupert's been around for a couple of decades, and we've always talked about rural and urban as if they were very separate things. And in reality, they're very intertwined. And the future for both rural and urban areas are very closely tied together in thinking about the way we produce food and sources of alternative energy. And both of those will happen in rural areas. Rural areas are where we produce food, and they're where we're finding new sources of energy. So I think for that, that makes a very bright prospect for rural areas moving forward.
Well, Shirley, let me ask you this. How prepared do you feel at this point? You're in about to go into your 20s. You've grown up in a small town. How prepared do you feel in terms of providing for your economic well-being in the future?
Well, as far as job opportunities go, you know, I haven't been around enough to, you know, see what potentially lies there as far as opportunities. But in the right now, I, you know, when I look for a job, there aren't too many, to be honest, you know. I was fortunate enough to find a church in Fayette, Missouri, which is about 15 minutes from where I live, who needed a secretary. So it was perfectly lined up for me to start working there and find that opportunity in another small town. As far as my future, I feel prepared simply because of my education. We kind of touched on this earlier with the technology that goes with education. I'm a full online student right now through Liberty University in Virginia, and I'm pursuing a degree in counseling. And with the church that I work at, just some of the connections that I've had in my life, I feel like are really preparing me for that field. And so with my online education and the connections that I have, I feel blessed, and I feel prepared, you know, for my future and my future career. But as far as job opportunities in the small town, you know, I don't know what I would do with that career in a small town. You know, I may have to go to a more urban area to look for work.
So is that your plan then, to finish the degree and then look for a bigger market to move to?
Yeah, actually, that's my plan right now. With some of the things that have been going on in my life right now, you know, I see potential jobs in Columbia or Moberly, which, you know, if that works out, then I could potentially stay in Harrisburg and not have to leave. My work would just be in a different town. As far as counseling in Harrisburg, though, you know, I don't think that there's a huge opportunity there. But, you know, maybe, you know, I wouldn't say it's completely shut out of idea.
And what about your classmates? How many of them are still in town?
Not too many, I don't think. I think maybe two or three. I graduated in a class of about 50, and as far as I know, most of them are in Columbia, but some have gone farther. I know that I've stayed, and maybe two or three, maybe even just one other person besides me is still in Harrisburg. But I know that they visit a lot because they still have family connections here. So they're close enough that they didn't go too far that they can visit. But yeah, as far as school and work and stuff, I believe most of them are in Columbia.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it goes back to what Roger said about how we define community. So I think today, where you live and where you work don't need to be the same place. And so what you think of as your community is very different now than it probably was.
Well, and we have more communities than we thought we had. You know, I have my Google Plus community. We have our Facebook community. We have our school community, our work community, our church community, so many different communities, and so many of them intertwine with each other that we have just, as a society, gotten so used to this. You know, you talked about living in Harrisburg and driving to work in Columbia. That's still probably going to be, time-wise, a shorter commute to drive 15 or 20 miles than it would be if you lived in the heart of St. Louis or in a crowded area of St. Louis and had to struggle with I-70 traffic, you know. So, you know, it's going to be, do you want to live in the urban areas, what most people would consider, or be willing to live 15 to 20 miles out and get to work faster than what you might in the larger cities? barring no car wrecks or stalled vehicles. You know, the worst we have to deal with here is maybe a tractor on the road. I had to get a little bit behind coming into work this morning. There was a big tractor with duals coming down the road. But, you know, the way that the state and the communities clear the roads during the inclement weather have it's so much improved that it's easier to get around, and the roads have gotten better, you know, so community has certainly changed.
Yeah. I mean, especially in the ones right around Columbia. But if you get further north or further south and you get, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 60 minutes away from one of the cities in the state, which a lot of our smaller communities in Missouri are, it changes that picture a little bit, right?
A little bit. You know, I have friends that live in Hallsville that drive to Jefferson City and work every day. So, you know, you're looking at about a 45-mile drive. You know, but they allow an hour to drive back and forth, and they're willing to do that. They have a good job. They don't want to leave the smaller towns, you know. So, and up north, there are good roads. Now, truly, there are areas that are much more remote that if you want a specialized job like counseling, like she mentioned earlier, or something else, it's going to be a little more difficult to find in your area.
Shirley, let me ask you this about your experience. What is it that you wish were in the small town that you don't get? You're a single mother living in a small town. Are there things or services or other things that you know would be helpful, and if you lived in a place that was bigger might be there but aren't?
Well, I think going along with having a son, sometimes I wish I were a little bit closer to help, you know, emergency or medical-wise. From his doctor, the Fayette Medical Clinic, we're only 15 minutes away, but he had an ear infection recently and we had to drive, you know, half an hour to, you know, the ER to get him. So, you know, sometimes, yes, I do think that I wish I had better opportunities for that, or didn't have to go half an hour to get everything I needed at Walmart, you know, when I have to grocery shop. You know, it's, you do really have to plan your schedule around that big trip. But, you know, for necessities-wise, there's a little grocery store down the road from my house, CNS in Harrisburg. And so if there's something I really need, I can just go there and pick it up. So I'm not too far away from things, but I think that people, you know, if they are 60 minutes away from a big town, that would be even more difficult for them, you know, and I'm sure that they would feel that need quite a bit more than I do.
Yeah. It's interesting. So your shopping takes place 30 minutes away from where you live for the most part.
For the most part, yeah.
And your job is in another community as well. So the economics of your situation are completely removed from the place you live, aside from maybe your rent, right?
Yeah, actually, thinking about it, most everything in my life is not in Harrisburg, except where I live. My job is in Fayette. My family is in Moberly. Most of my shopping is done in Moberly or Columbia. So I'm not there too often, you know, when I have something to do. But I do enjoy living there, you know, for the free time and being away and the quiet, you know, it's safer. So I like being able to go home to that. So I think that in my situation, I'm very fortunate, you know, to be able to reach out, you know, into other areas and get what I need done, but still have, you know, that small community feel when I come home.
Mm-hmm. And what about the economics of that?
I think if you talk to many rural people across Missouri and across the country, they'll say they live in a rural community because they choose to, because the quality of life they receive there or they have there cannot be matched elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And there are economics of it. Sometimes it requires a long commute to get to an economic opportunity. I choose to live in a pretty rural community an hour from Columbia, and my job is in Columbia. So I think those quality of life aspects that you necessarily can't really measure with data are really important. And that's really behind the passion that people have in rural communities for why they want to stay there.
Okay. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the prospects for people growing up in rural communities today. Joining me in the studio are Roger Brawlier, Technology Integration Specialist for the Hallsville School District, and Kathy Miller, Program Director for the Rural Policy Research Institute, also known as RUPRI. We're going to say thanks and goodbye to Shirley LeBlanc, who's been joining us and sharing her story after the... So thank you very much,
yes,
Shirley, for being here today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
After the break, we're going to be joined by Dallas Leroux, a senior from Hallsville High School who plays on the football team and plans to join the military after graduation. We'll hear his story after we take a short break, so stick around and join our conversation after the break. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the outlook for people growing up in rural communities today. Joining me in the studio are Roger Brawlier, a technology integration specialist for the Hallsville School District, and Kathy Miller, program director at the Rural Policy Research Institute, known as RUPRI. And we say hello to Dallas LaRoe, a senior from Hallsville High School who plays on the football team and is going into the military after he graduates. Welcome to our program, Dallas LaRoe.
Thank you.
Glad to have you joining us now today. For those of you in our audience, we wonder, what do you think might help the most to strengthen rural communities into the future? We'd love to hear your ideas. So give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Dallas, you're just joining us here. You're a senior, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And what's your plan?
Well, I'm already in the National Guard. I went through basic during the summer of my junior, senior year of high school. So my next step is I leave June 6th for AIT, which is further training. So, like, I'm an Army cook, so I'll go through 2 weeks of culinary school, and I'll get back. And since it's the National Guard, I have the advantage of going to college and being in the military at the same time. So I can go to college, you know, at Mizzou or somewhere local or anywhere in the state of Missouri, as long as 1 week in a month I go to my unit, which my unit is in Jeff City. So 1 week in a month I'll go to Jeff City and do stuff with my unit and go from there, so I can really, you know, part-time military, part-time college student, and get the best of both worlds.
And why did you decide on that as your path out of high school?
I come from a military family, normally naval, but I like the National Guard because it allows for me, like I said, go to college, also be able to stay at home, though, help my family with whatever financial needs they need, or just, I really just stay close to family and just help. And it's a federal and a state. So, like, if there's another incident in Joplin, like with the tornadoes or something, you know, my unit can be sit down there and I can help them. Or if I need to go to Afghanistan, I can. It kind of allows me to be real flexible.
Right. And do you plan to go back to Hallsville after you get a college education?
That would be nice. My family's grown up in Hallsville. A lot of people from my family work there and attend school there, so.
And you think it'll happen?
Hopefully, yeah. But, yeah, it'd be really helpful and nice to kind of see familiar faces for a while.
Mm-hmm. And what do you hope to do down the line, when you get done with college and you go back to your town?
Well, I'm going to pursue a degree in computer science, so I'm going to work with computers and stuff like that. So hopefully maybe one day do what Roger does or another position that needs filled, because my mom is also a teacher at the school, so I kind of have help in that area too.
Mm-hmm. And were your choices, like deciding to go into the military and get a college degree on that plan, I mean, was that with the idea that you would go back to your town or not?
The idea was it helps pay for college and, like I said, helps me stay close to home. So living about 10 minutes from Hallsville and about 20 minutes from Columbia, I can go Hallsville or Columbia. But with my family history at Hallsville, with my mom being a teacher and a cousin being a superintendent, and other family members being various positions there, it allows for me, that helped me to go back. So it would be nice to go back and just kind of help, because me and a friend were talking one day, and like the elementary kids nowadays, by the time we get our college degrees and come back, we'll be high schoolers. So it'd be interesting to see some young faces I help get through elementary school, see them as high schoolers.
That's cool. Very cool. And is your story sort of typical among you and your friends? I mean, do they all plan to come back too?
I got a couple who like to come back as like football coaches from the football team. There's a few that like to be teachers. Other than that, a couple of my friends joined the military too, but they have to wait till after graduation to join their respective branch.
So. Interesting. It's interesting that there's a core of you that actually do want to go back, because we keep hearing about people wanting to go off and find their fortunes elsewhere.
You know, and I think that a lot of people would come back to the small towns because a lot of people like it feels comfortable, it feels home, it's what they know, their family, their friends are there. Especially the ones that grew up in that area tend to want to have something to gravitate back towards. You know, the issue is the jobs aspect, and that's where, you know, as far as physical plants, labor places, you know, I know in Hallsville, for example, our school is the largest employer. Our school population is larger than the population of the town itself. You know, we have 1,417 students enrolled as of this morning in our school district. Well, that's more than the population of Hallsville. So within that town, we have a larger employer / city to consider. You know, so if you don't work at the school, there aren't a lot of other places. Now, that's changing. That's growing. you know, but that's where my hope is, that technology, as it advances, will open up more opportunities that other students haven't had, where they can come back to their home communities and stay and work.
Right. And what are the prospects for job creation? I mean, we talked a little bit about this in the first half of the program, but, you know, the school being the driver of the economy now, I mean, that's good, but it only sustains a certain number of jobs, right?
That's right. And that's very typical, that you'll see the school or maybe a hospital, right, being the largest and really oftentimes the only employer in a local community. Entrepreneurship is really important. And I think for young people, young meaning middle school, high school, learning about entrepreneurship opportunities, both the mechanics of starting a business, as well as thinking about their interests and thinking about how they can use technology. Their local community, in fact, is their market research, because they've grown up there. They know the people. They know their potential customers. I think that really has some opportunity for rural communities, entrepreneurship development.
Well, and a lot of times there are some tax advantages. You know, it's cheaper sometimes to have a small business in a smaller town because, A, you can avoid some of the higher taxes. There are some tax incentives that are out there that encourage that. And then again, you're going to get people likely that have lived in that area that don't want to leave. So you've got some stability in your workforce if you pick the right type of job that's going to fit with your community. And that's one thing business owners and students coming through need to keep in mind. They've got to, with the rural communities, find something that the local population is going to blend with and want to be there and want to support. And when they do that, it's going to be a fairly stable operating and working environment. I would think so anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
And how much of that is incumbent upon university education? Because so far we've been talking with two teenagers who are, you know, going that route. A lot of students who grow up in small towns don't, right? I mean, college is not something that they wind up doing. They stay in their town. They don't have a college education, and that winds up being a sizable chunk of the future.
That's right. And military as well. I mean, I think rural youth are overrepresented in the military, much more so than urban youth. So that's a very common choice for rural youth as well, is the military.
And what about the rural youth who don't go to college and don't go in the military? What are their prospects?
I mean, certainly I think it requires innovation, you know, just so no different than we've been talking about. I mean, I certainly, you know, our college education is beneficial to all youth. We want young people from rural communities to have access to higher education. Online education is certainly an option that's being utilized more and more by rural youth as well.
And I always hate to say, you know, when they don't go on to college or education should never stop when you finish a high school or a college or a master's degree program or advanced education. You know, my goal as a teacher and as an educator is to promote lifelong learning, because for some people, literally a high school, now, and believe me, I'm an advocate of going to college, but for some people, you know, high school education might be what they need. If they're going to take over the family farm and they're needed back there immediately, they should absolutely take classes, because they're going to need to know more about plant sciences, about accounting, about marketing, about entrepreneurship, because they have to cover all of these gamuts, where a job in the, quote, city, they might be able to specialize on just marketing or just plant sciences. You know, the family farmer has to know it all. And I grew up on a large dairy and beef and grain farm. So, you know, my dad had to wear many, many hats. And he came from the military background as well. So education doesn't stop once you, quote, graduate from whatever institution or school you get through with. So that's, you know, they've got to keep that in mind when they get done. You're not just done with school. You've got to keep learning all your life.
Right. Dallas, do you have friends that aren't planning to go to college?
Actually, most of my friends are at least going to go 2 years at MACC, which is pretty nice, because some of them can't get into like Mizzou or like the bigger colleges because they can't afford it or they don't necessarily have the grades. But it's nice to see small colleges like MACC. They can go through for 2 years and at least receive an associate's degree in something. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of them, their parents work for the universities around Missouri, and they get in there for, you know, half the tuition sometimes, or they play snuff sports that they're good enough at, they get scholarships. It's really interesting to see all the different ways a lot of people go to college from Hallsville.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting. In terms of the community college stuff, do you have a sense of what kinds of things they're trying to pursue career-wise of those people who are going there?
A common one I've actually heard is business, along with like, business degrees or agriculture. As Roger mentioned, agriculture is big in Hallsville. Mm-hmm. So, and we're starting to become a big technology school with learning computer skills and stuff. So, I mean, a lot of the kids, they're trying to find something they're good at. Like one of my closest friends, he's great with computers. So he's going to college for computers. Whereas one of my other closest friends is he can be on a tractor all day and be happy. So he's going to go to college for that. And
right. And do his parents have a farm or something? Or?
They do. One of them, their father, he actually works for the University of Missouri's agriculture department. So he's had a summertime job there for many years now. And so it's all he knows how to do. And that's all he wants to do. So he's going to do it.
You know, you touched on the community colleges. It is amazing to me the amount of diversity that our our two-year colleges and institutes offer. You know, down the road in Mexico at the ATC, they've got a nuclear engineering program there at ATC, and people don't realize that. That's just down the road. Computers are big in all of these schools. There's marketing, there's nursing, there's agricultural things. There's a huge variety in many rural schools that let people go through and get their not their RN degree, but their, nursing certifications, mm-hmm. respiratory therapy, all very close. And there are a lot of incentives in the rural areas for these community colleges to come in there. And that really is opening a lot of doors for people.
One of the things, there was an article that came out in the Chronicle of Higher Ed a couple of years ago that talked about this problem and offered a few suggestions for things that communities could do. And one of them is sort of what you're talking about, the sort of getting the colleges to do more things that would entice students to come from small towns and to take that back with them. Another issue that article raised is the idea of immigration into small towns. It sort of talked about that. And I wonder how much that is playing out in Missouri small towns. Basically, the idea is that along with trying to keep the young people in the towns and to keep those young people coming back, there was this other notion that, you know, there's a lot of immigration into our rural areas nowadays, and if communities could embrace that, there are ways to help build community around all of these new residents that are moving in. And I wonder if we could switch gears a little bit and talk about that and how that's playing out. Kathy, you might be able to talk a little more about how that's playing out generally, and then we could talk a little more about here.
It is a new trend, and certainly occurring in Missouri, where many, many rural communities are seeing a very rapid and large influx of new immigrants from other countries. In Missouri, there are several places around the state where this has occurred, and a large number of immigrants arriving in one place that's already small and historically has not seen very much diversity is a big shock to a community. So suddenly a school has to offer bilingual education. A local doctor's office has to offer bilingual services to reach this population. Certainly, it's a shock to rural communities. And I think it's just part of the changing nature of our rural communities. And many rural communities have really come together and embraced this non-native population and worked to create services in native languages and communities within communities to support this population that's coming in.
Mm-hmm. And have we seen that playing out in mid-Missouri here? Or to what degree, I should say, have we seen that playing out? Because I'm sure it's playing out to some degree.
You know, I can't give a very clear, I don't know, to be honest with you, in our area. You know, we have a variety, and you mentioned some really key things when she talked about schools all of a sudden having to offer extra services. I can think of when I was at a different school district, we had a student that moved here from India and didn't hardly speak any English at all. So we had a Hispanic ESL class. All of a sudden, this teacher, we had to find a teacher that could help with language arts, you know, to a completely different area. You know, so it was good for all of us because it kind of opened everyone's eyes and said, all right, hey, you know, there's our world is much smaller than what we think that it is, and it's getting ever increasingly smaller and smaller as time goes on. So it is a challenge. It can put a financial challenge on the school district and on communities. You know, she mentioned the doctor's office. You know, that's not something they probably thought of when they first opened the doors for business.
That's right. And in a community that has a very small population base, you know, suddenly a third of your elementary students don't speak English. And oftentimes it's a variety of cultures. It's not just Hispanic, or it's not just, you know, it's a variety three, four, five different languages being spoken at home, that suddenly a small school has to offer all these services. And it's quite a challenge for rural communities.
Well, and just getting used to the differences. You know, students might have a fight because they just don't know how to communicate. And they didn't like it because you took the doll or you took the toy they were playing at the recess. So, you know, they pushed or they shoved. And you have a fight on your hand because they just didn't know how to communicate and say, hey, I'd like to play with that. You know, kids are amazing with how accepting they are of people. You know, it's just the communication tool is what's missing.
Okay. Let me remind everyone once more, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the outlook for people growing up in our rural communities. Joining me in the studio are Roger Brawlier, Technology Integration Specialist for the Hallsville School District, and Kathy Miller, Program Director at the Rural Policy Research Institute, known as RUPRI. We also have Dallas Leroux, a senior from Hallsville High School, at the table here. For those of you in our audience, if you live in one of the really far areas from Columbia, because we've been sort of, you know, the suburbs of Columbia, if it could be said that. We'd love to hear from you and what your experience is like in your town a little further from the pull of a big university town like Columbia. So if you are listening, we'd love to hear what it's like in your town and what you see as the future. So please give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Dallas, I wonder, you know, over your schooling, has it been the same batch of students since you were in kindergarten, or have new people been brought into the mix?
Well, a good example of that would be a middle school band. When I was in seventh grade, we went from having 100 kids to, by the time we were fresh in high school, we had 30 kids. Hallsville, we changed a lot. My graduating class is probably the biggest, and we've gone from 160 kids to 130. And there's multiple kids who we go to school with, and they move out of the district, and they move back in. But there's a core group of us 13-year seniors who have, obviously, we've been there the whole ride and stuff, but we've had, you know, like so-and-so's cousin moves in for about a semester or a quarter, and then they move out. And then later on, we meet them at a basketball game, and we're playing a local school. We're like, oh, where'd you move to, kind of thing. But, you know, we have a core group in each grade level that's been there since day one, with a lot of extra people who come in and out. And some of those people still come back to visit, which is real nice. Right.
But not an influx of new people that have sort of stayed.
No, not really. Well, it depends. For example, I have a friend who moved to Hallsville, and the reason he moved to Hallsville is he had a cousin that goes there. Well, now he moved back to Georgia, but he'll still come up on the holidays, visit us, hang around at school sometimes when he's in town. So it's just kind of neat to see that even though the students will only be there for like a week or two and leave, but they'll still come back to visit. It's just that little town impact that we have, and it's real nice to see.
Interesting. And it sort of speaks to the mobility of America in general, right? I mean, people moving in and out of towns 30 years ago, 50 years ago, probably not as common, right? It raises another question that it ties back to something that we talked about earlier, is the distance thing. I mean, if you live in a small town, I mean, if you live close to Columbia, it's not a big deal, 15, 20 minutes up the highway. If you live further out, it's longer to get to things. What about that transportation thing? I mean, it makes owning a car almost a necessity, right? And that's a big expense that may or may not be sustainable for a lot of people. What about that aspect of it, the sort of core requirements to make it work?
Well, I had a foreign exchange student from Germany, and I remember within the first month or so of him moving here, he wanted to go see North Dakota, South Dakota, California, all these great places. He said, can we just go there for the weekend? And I said, it doesn't work like that. He said, well, why not? You know, and you know, Germany and Europe, lots of places are close by. Their definition of rural is very different from ours. And I said, well, it would take us 2 days to drive there. And he said, oh, you know, So yeah, a car is a necessity, and as fuel prices have increased, you know, vehicle prices have increased, it's becoming increasingly difficult for students or young people to have that mobility, to allow them that freedom, right, you know, to move around and to get good jobs as teenagers.
And wages tend to be a little lower in rural areas too, right? So you're kind of piling on expense with lower salary. I mean, how does that work? How do people put those together?
Yeah, I mean, I think the very thing that makes rural areas rural is their distance and their remoteness, which makes transportation probably the most important factor. So I once had somebody from Brooklyn say to me, well, it takes me 45 minutes to get to work. It takes you 45 minutes to get to work. We're exactly the same. And I said, well, what if your car breaks down? He said, well, I'll use my car to go to work.
Right.
And so really, if you do not have a car, you are stuck. You cannot get to the pediatrician. You cannot get to the grocery store. You cannot get to work. And if you're a very low-income family, you may not be able to afford a car. So that's really where the difference is. You cannot take a bus or a taxi or a train to get to the services that you need. So the very thing that makes rural areas rural also is their biggest challenge. You just you have to have a vehicle. And for a low-income family, that's a real challenge.
In many cases, depending on the family size, you may need more than one vehicle.
Right.
Just because, you know, son is what here, daughter's here, you've got to get them to the two different places while a parent is working. So, yeah, it's a real challenge for the
areas. I have a job in Columbia, extracurricular activities in several different directions. And so, you know, logistics are very challenging.
Right. Dallas, do you have a car?
Yes, I do.
And do most of your friends have cars?
Yes. And for those, like, our friends that don't have cars, what's really nice is, like, they'll call us and be like, hey, I have to go to Columbia for, like, go get groceries or something. They'll be like, okay. And normally they live, like, 5 minutes from our house. So you just go pick them up, go to Columbia, and do it. And go do what you need to do, which is really nice because everyone tends to know everybody, so.
Mm-hmm. What about the other aspects of small town? Like, if you were talking to other people about your experience, positive and negative, what would you say, first of all, are the other positive things we haven't talked about, Dallas, about living in a small community like you do?
Well, like I sort of hit on earlier, it's like you just kind of know everybody. So, like, if your car breaks down, you know, you can just go walk up the road to somebody's house you know, or call somebody who is maybe 2 minutes away and they get a hold of you. And then there's also a lot of small towns around us, like Harrisburg or Sturgeon and Centralia, that in sports you play against the same kids from kindergarten until you graduate, so you kind of get to know them. So you can kind of, it's like a family sort of, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody, everyone knows who they're related to. There are certain family names that are well known around there, and so it just makes it easier to get along with everybody.
Mm-hmm. And what about the flip side of that? I mean, growing up as a teenager in a small town, are there things that you wish were different?
The flip side is boring Friday night, nothing to do, got to go to Columbia or somewhere else, which isn't bad. But as we mentioned earlier, if you don't have a car, it kind of limits that possibility. And for a lot of my friends, they would like to go to college for like football or basketball or baseball. And Hallsville necessarily doesn't have that publicity, which I know there's that part where the athlete has to do it themselves. But I feel like in Hallsville, it's more on the athlete to do it than kind of, you know, bigger schools like Hickman or Rockbridge that everyone just kind of knows their name and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there other issues that the rural communities are facing in Missouri or nationwide in terms of the trying to sustain and grow?
I think There's areas that are facing sort of long-term population loss. The Great Plains have historically been losing population. On the flip side of that, there's areas in the country that are facing these energy booms, places where they're finding natural resources and extracting natural resources, people flocking to these places for these job opportunities around natural resource extraction, which, you know, brings other challenges of the transportation infrastructure, the healthcare infrastructure as well. So there's a lot going on in rural areas, both good and bad, growth and decline. And rural areas are just constantly innovating and finding ways to adapt to all these changes. They always have, and they always will.
And so what are some of the most interesting innovations you've seen out there in terms of what small communities are doing?
I think really the innovation really is not necessarily in one new piece of technology or one specific thing they do. It's just the fact that if you find a rural community that's facing a challenge, the community will come together and find a way to meet that challenge. It's the sort of long-term roots that go with a rural community. Even if you're not from that rural community or generationally from that rural community, there's some strong sense of place that makes meeting those challenges and finding solutions to those problems, it's going to happen.
Well, and kind of tagging along that, then when these things happen, one of the issues that faces a smaller community is communication. Mm-hmm. You know, going to the local Casey's store or, you know, the corner gas station, that's where most people hear what's going on. So from an educational standpoint, it's very difficult to communicate with our patrons. You know, if you're a parent of a student, that's easy. But if you live in the school district proper and not necessarily in the city limits, that's a real challenge to get communication out to your taxpayers, your tax base. You know, so that's an area that that remains to be developed in a very effective way. Technology is helping with that, certainly. But, you know, I remember growing up in a small town about an hour and a half east of Springfield and south of Rolla an hour. So we were in the middle of nowhere. There was never any news or anything on the television set about our community. You know, internet is changing that, you know, where everybody's a journalist and with a cell phone can broadcast right there, you know, so that's changed things a little bit, but to say, you know, this is what's going on in this area, it was a big deal when Houston, Missouri was on KY3 News in Springfield, you know.
Yeah, I think there, you know, I live in one of these communities where there's a school, and that's, you know, what I knew about my community changed fundamentally when I had students enroll in the school. So, for families that do not have students in the school, there really is a communication gap,
right?
Because that's really where you find out everything you need to know is through the school.
And it's a challenge because, let me tell you, there's some great stuff going on in our schools. You know, everybody, you hear the gamut on education. Oh, it's great. Oh, it's terrible. There is some really good stuff. There's things that we can improve on, just like in any other business. But there are some amazing things happening in our urban schools and especially in our rural schools that people just flat out don't know about because they think, oh, well, okay, it's school. Well, if you could come in and spend 30 minutes and walk through the hallways, I guarantee you their jaws would drop and they would say, man, I wish I were in school right now to do what these kids are doing. It's some amazing things. You know, our fourth graders are YouTubing and they're creating video commercials. You know, so there's some great stuff.
Right. What about the social services in small towns? I mean, do people have adequate access to assistance when they need it? And you know, in bigger cities, there are lots of offices of agencies that can help people. But out in a smaller town, if you don't have a car especially, it becomes a real problem,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly transportation is key. Oftentimes, there's a need to travel perhaps a significant distance to go to an office where you can apply for certain social benefits. There's a lot more online application processes nowadays in a lot of human services, and that helps. But again, internet access is required.
Right.
There's always going to be some need to travel to a particular place, particularly when we're talking about things like job training programs or other types of services. So the remoteness is the challenge, and transportation is the key.
And do you know of things that are being done to address some of those challenges?
Well, again, there's a lot of online services being offered, and that has some positive results. I think having a physical place, not every small community can have a physical place where services are offered, so providing transportation opportunities for people to get to a Boonville or a Columbia or a Fayette so that they can access the services they need, co-location of services so that you have to go to one building instead of seven or something like that. Those types of programs are very successful in reaching the needs.
Okay. That's about all the time we're going to have today for our program. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us today. First, Roger Brellier, Technology Integration Specialist for the Hallsville School District. Shirley LeBlanc, a young mother from Harrisburg. And Kathy Miller, Program Director at the Rural Policy Research Institute, known as RUPRI. Thanks also to Dallas Leroux, a senior from Hallsville High School, for joining us. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBI or by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. There you'll be able to watch a video feed of our program, submit your questions and comments, and participate in an online chat with others in our audience. You'll also find a video archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Eric Stazak. Pat Akers is our audio producer. I'm Reuben Stern. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.